The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Fantasy NBA Today podcast.
Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to the end of another week, end of the second week of off-season episodes. It's a damn shame. I'm doing a better job of keeping track this year, so obviously this is off-season episode number 10. During the NBA playoffs, I am Dan Bespris, and this is Fantasy NBA Today, Sports Ethos presentation. Welcome to the program, anybody who might be squeezing in a live viewing, but mostly those who are hanging out with us after the fact. Today's show, I thought, would be kind of a fun one to look at a few players that came into this season as what I'd like to refer to more as kind of totals darlings and how that panned out. And then if there's anything that we can extract from that to use towards our drafting in the future. The list of totals darlings or whatever we want to call them is relatively short, because it's almost impossible to predict who's going to actually make it through a season fully healthy. But there are a few names of guys that, at least at this point in their careers, and, you know, sort of the build of their body and how they get used, these are guys where you can point and say, you know what, this is a guy who I think has a better chance of maintaining a certain measure of health, and it wasn't just pure luck. Because for a lot of guys, they'll have, you know, a healthy season. Steal the line from Wayne's World. I don't even own a gun. A lot of players will have a healthy season, but not that many can string a few together in a way that feels sustainable. The guys that we were looking at coming into this year as players that we expected to put up a very large number of games played were Anthony Edwards. If you go all the way kind of to the top of the board, the top of the board, Nikola Jokic is the guy you figured was going to play a ton of ball games up at the top. The rest of the guys in that initial grouping, you're kind of like, yeah, probably. Jason Tatum was another one at the top-ish of the... I mean, Nikola Jokic was number one, so that one's a little bit of a moot point, but we'll discuss it anyway. Jason Tatum, who was going in the middle of the first round, Anthony Edwards, who was going near the turn, those are the highest-profile guys that you'd put in kind of the we expect them to play in most of their basketball games contingent. Domantas Sabonis and Mikal Bridges were the guys. Sabonis was sort of early mid-second round, not too far behind Anthony Edwards, I suppose. Mikal Bridges was more towards the back end of that second round. It dries up kind of quick after that, but as you continue to move forward, DeMar DeRozan was one that's been extraordinarily durable for the last few years in a row. Nikola Vucevic, who's been very durable for a few years running now. I don't know that you could throw Brook Lopez in there. He's been very healthy lately, but there was sort of a nice solid downturn in the middle of that. I thought Austin Reeves was actually on my list of guys that I thought was going to play through a lot of stuff this year, and that ended up actually panning out. So that one was, I don't know if it was definitely a real one, but it stuck through. Hi, Theodore. There's my boy making an appearance on the morning show. he's a handsome little fella. And honestly, I don't even know that we need to go that far down the board to someone like a Reeves, because he wasn't expected to be that high on a per-game angle, but I threw him in there anyway. I thought Bruce Brown had a shot to be that guy, and then he got traded mid-season and frankly just wasn't very good, so it kind of, that one sort of didn't matter. And that's probably kind of your list of the guys that you're pointing to, and you're like, yeah, this guy, there's something about the way he plays, whether it's, you know, low to the ground, etc., where the health feels more sustainable as opposed to more fluky. A lot of guys have fluky good health years and then are unable to replicate it. You could probably throw Bam Adebayo in that mix also. I mean, he went through a couple of years where he wasn't playing in as many ball games, but this year he was back up again to, what was the final total for this regular season on Bam? 71? Call it an eh. You know, he was a guy that liked to be sort of the Iron Man, but everybody's an Iron Man until their bodies fall apart, so he's kind of like a meh. And I didn't have him on my list for guys I thought were going to be extraordinarily durable this year. He was fine. So let's just go back to the first handful of names that were mentioned, and I'll throw those back out there just in case you got lost in the mishmash, the shuffle of the names that I added that didn't really belong. The ones that I think do belong on that board are Nikola Jokic, but again, what are we going to do with that? Jason Tatum, Anthony Edwards, Domantas Sabonis, Mikal Bridges, DeMar DeRozan, and I think we can probably put Vooch in there, Nikola Vucevic. It's been a few years in a row now. It just seems like his game and the way he moves as a human being, and I don't know, maybe we see him play harder somewhere else, but like his minutes are fine. He was 76 games this regular season after 82 last year, 73 the year before that. He's kind of, again, turned himself into a more durable player. 70... I think in this, that was the 72-game season before that. So Vooch were at like six-ish consecutive years of basically playing in every ball game. So yeah, I think he fits. So then you ask yourself the question of, first of all, let's just sort of accept, and I don't know that we can accept that these guys are just going to be healthy again next year, because in all likelihood, again, like guys are healthy until they're not, but these are dudes that play through the little things. The little things don't tend to happen to them, and I think you can start to say that there are a handful, and again, we're talking about, what, five, six guys I just listed in the entire NBA, where you could point and say something that dude is doing is slightly different than what other dudes are doing in the NBA, whether it's the ability to heal, whether it's the ability to sort of avoid the little ankle tweaks, things like that. Players that are built to have more durable knees. It's hard to really put your finger on it, on what that might be. And also understanding that as these guys get older, because a couple of the names I just threw out there, DeMar DeRozan in particular, like as these guys get older, you figure at some point that stuff is going to catch up to them. Because I think DeMar led the league in minutes played this year. It was like he and Miles Bridges, I think, were fighting each other for that honor. At some point, that's going to catch up. Is it going to be next year? I don't know. I mean, this was a contract year. But anyway, let's jump over some of that minutia of, okay, will this happen again? Blah, blah, blah. Let's just assume, for argument's sake, that that very short list of players I mentioned are guys that are just built a little bit different. I mean, like, for Jokic in particular, that dude doesn't get off the ground. It's very easy to point and just say, look, a guy that's not jumping is avoiding a lot of the potential pitfalls for little tiny injuries that other guys have. He's not going to turn an ankle. He's not off the ground. His ankle couldn't possibly land on anybody. He might step on someone else's foot, but those guys can recover from that a lot quicker than coming down from 3.5 feet in the air on someone's foot. Just the nature of the beast. I don't understand fully how Jason Tatum does what he does. He's up in the air, but seems to avoid the little things somehow. Anthony Edwards, I would point to youth and just his build as someone who probably can take a little bit more punishment. Mikal Bridges, that's just his thing. Sabonis, like Jokic, doesn't really get off the ground. He's banging into people, but he's built a body to withstand that. Vooch doesn't really get off the ground much, also doesn't really bang into many people. He's got two things working for him. And then DeMar, I don't fully understand how he does it. Maybe a guy who's just sort of built a little different. Maybe he and Jason Tatum have that same little thing, whatever that is. Good knees, good ankles, something like that. Better shoes, I don't know. Let's just assume, for argument's sake, I repeat myself, that these are players that just have something about them that's a little bit different. And so we go from there to say, I don't like what I'm wearing, this very old Visalia rawhide fleece on today's show. Maybe I should zip it up all the way. There you go. Now you guys can't tell how whack the neck is on this thing, how beaten to hell. So for the third time, let's just say, assuming for argument's sake, these players are just built a little bit different. Is there a reason to target these guys in fantasy leagues? This, in my opinion, is where you do have to dig into the minutiae a little bit. And we're going to keep this not super dry on today's show, and we're going to pare down the thesis sentence on this part to say, these guys are, in my opinion, some of them, those that are worth targeting, are worth targeting only if you believe that their per-game rank is equal to or better than their ADP. Totals rank is nice, but if the per-game rank isn't there, you're betting on a thing that you really can't fully understand. Not you. Me too.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call. Click Grainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Meaning, we just assumed for argument's sake that these six-ish, I forgot how many I'd said, players are just durable. But we don't know that to be true. In real life, anything can happen to any one of these guys. You could have one bad injury and the whole thing goes to hell. Yeah, maybe they're guys that just kind of avoid the little nagging things, but that's not to say that, you know, Sabonis might not jam a hand. He played through a busted wrist last year, but still, like, it could happen to any one of these guys. That one thing, then suddenly they're missing 15 to 20 ball games. As much as, in my opinion, getting off to that quick start, especially on the head-to-head side, is super important, and health is, I mean, I might argue, paramount. That might be the most important thing in your head-to-head league. Drafting these types of players, if you think their per-game markers are worse than their draft position, is not a good idea. yes, they might still beat their mark by totals. It's true. I think we can take... I feel like Sabonis is an example of that. Let me make sure we're getting the numbers right on this. Sabonis played in all 82, right? Just to be perfectly clear on this, let's triple check ourselves. Want to make sure we triple check our math. I believe he played in all 82 games this year. He did, after 79 last year. So he's missed three games over the last 2 years. And by and large, he's been a relatively healthy dude. Missed like 10 games a couple of years. Yeah, the season he was traded was his least healthy season of his career. But otherwise, he's been generally 85% games or higher, and much higher than that last 2 years, and frankly, much higher than that most of the time. But here's the issue. This is a guy that was getting drafted like 14th, 15th in fantasy leagues. And there was almost no prayer that his per-game value was going to get anywhere near that. Last year, I think it was fair to say his value pretty much capped out. And I mean, this year he had a great season, 19.5 points, 13.5 rebounds, 8 assists this year. That's a ridiculous number for a center, for anybody. 0.9 steals, 0.6 blocks, 59% from the field, rough at the free throw line and high turnovers. But of course, the turnovers are because he's passing the ball so much. He was number 29 in 9-cat this year in what I would classify as a very, very good season. Sabonis was awesome this year. Second highest scoring season of his career, way out in front of any other year in assists. Minutes were the second highest of his career, so the steals were pretty good. Highest blocks number of his entire career. Free throw number was down, so that's a spot where you could point and say, yeah, I mean, that could like tick up a little bit if the free throw percent was 73 instead of 70. Yeah, sure. And just a down year at the foul line, so that could push him from, you know, 29th up into the mid-20th. But again, there was almost no way in 9-cat that this dude was going to get to his ADP around 14. If he fell a little bit, okay, fine. It's a different monster. By the way, this isn't a show where I'm arguing that you shouldn't take Domantas Sabonis. In fact, I'm saying this is a situation where it actually worked because he did actually play in all 82 ball games, and so his final totals rank was 12th or 13th, depending on what site you're looking at. So he beat his ADP by like one or two, which, you know, not a massive win, but a hit. If you can get your second round pick to be a hit, that's generally a win in fantasy basketball. But it's unbelievably difficult to get a draft day win with a totals guy that you don't think is going to hit their mark on the per-game ledger. Let's look at the players that I just talked about, and we can kind of break them down as a group now, because I wanted to use Sabonis to illustrate a situation where it actually did work. He's basically the only one on that side. Of the names that I just mentioned, again, I'll repeat them in case you guys forgot. Nikola Jokic, Jason Tatum, Anthony Edwards, Domantas Sabonis, DeMar DeRozan, Nikola Vucevic. Those are the, I think I just did six, right? Six guys that, and Austin Reeves, if you want to go farther down the board. Those are the guys that I think we've pointed at some point during the preseason to say, these are guys that are probably going to stay healthy this year. Do we want to do anything with them? The guys that on that list I had listed as below their ADP, and we can wipe Austin Reeves out because when you're in that 80 to 100 range, being a totals monster, you're going to go way up the board because everybody's so close together. So playing an extra, you know, four to eight ball games over the guys around you, you're going to jump around to two rounds of value. So that one's a little bit of a, like, kind of a gray area. So it's much easier to win the totals battle when your per game rank is down in that, you know, seventh, eighth, ninth round territory. I think it's more important for us to focus on the guys up near the top because this is where things can go very right or very wrong for your fantasy team. So eliminating Austin Reeves, it's Jokic, it's Tatum, Edwards, Sabonis, Bridges, DeRozan, Vooch. So it's seven names, not six. Apologies. Of those seven names, the players that I personally, I don't know that this was consensus, but I personally said during the preseason that I thought would have a per game rank lower than their ADP. Where, well, you can't do Jokic because, like, if he's not number one, he's not number one. So we can probably knock Jokic out of this board here. So let's take the other six. The guys on that list that I said were going to be lower than their draft position per game were Tatum, Edwards, Sabonis, and Bridges. Basically the first four that we just listed, minus Jokic, because everybody figured he would be number one, and he was awfully damn close. Actually, I think he was number one by totals in the end, because Shea missed a couple of games that penultimate week, and Jokic passed him, because he played, what, 79 of his 82 games? There he is again. Nikola Jokic. Safest play in the history of fantasy basketball. Of those four names I just listed, and I said on draft night, I said I thought DeMar DeRozan and I thought Nikola Vucevic would beat their ADP on a per-game basis. By the way, all of those statements ended up being right. Some by more than others. Jason Tatum had a ADP like around 6 or 7, as I recall. His per-game rank ended up at 15. Anthony Edwards had an ADP around 12 or 13. His per-game rank was 37. Domantas Sabonis, we just talked about, ADP around 14, 15. His per-game was 29. This is all 9-cat. Mikal Bridges had an ADP around 20 to 25 range. His per-game mark was like 90. Absolute disaster there. DeRozan had an ADP in the 40s. He finished with a per-game rank at 39, was it? No, 31, excuse me. So he actually beat it by about a round. And Vooch, his ADP fell to around 60 before draft day. His per-game rank was 50. So small win there, but did beat it by a very small amount thanks to a nice second half. The thing that panned out here is that of those guys, of the guys that I thought would have a per-game rank below their draft position, only Domantas Sabonis beat his ADP by totals. Tatum was fine. He finished at 11th. You got a perfectly reasonable late first-rounder, but he didn't beat his ADP of 6 or 7. Anthony Edwards had a totals rank of 20, played in 79 out of 82 damn ball games, so the durability was very much there, but didn't get to his ADP of 13. Okay, again, totally fine year. Edwards had a good season. Not saying these guys were bad. I'm just saying they didn't beat it. Mikal Bridges came nowhere even in the vicinity of getting to it. I think he was 55 by totals despite playing in all 82 ball games, which again, like, probably didn't detonate your fantasy. None of these guys detonated your fantasy team, but none of them was an ADP, what you quote-unquote call a win from draft night, except for Sabonis, who beat his ADP by about 2.5. But we should be accurate here. So Tatum was like a minus 4, Sabonis was like a plus 2, 2.5. Edwards was like a minus 7. Bridges was about a minus 30. And then of the two guys that I listed that I said would probably beat their ADP on the per-game side, DeMar DeRozan finished at number 14 by totals, so crushed his ADP by about 2.5 rounds. Yeah, more like 2.5. And Vooch finished at 33 by totals, beating his ADP by about 25 slots. Remember, he was going in the late 50s, early 60s by draft night. This is not a podcast to say that you guys need to love DeMar DeRozan and Vooch. In fact, quite the opposite. We're analyzing results that already happened, and these types of things don't necessarily repeat themselves. What I do want us to take away from this discussion, before we talk a little bit about the playoffs going on right now, and I think this is the logical conclusion, is when we're assessing fantasy players for next draft season, and you line up your guys and say, okay, these are the guys that I feel take care of themselves, whether it's the way they play or their personal regimen or whatever, These are the guys that take care of themselves in a way where I feel pretty damn confident that they're going to push for 82 games played. Because not everybody in the NBA, you point and say, yeah, this guy's going to try to play an 82. A lot of guys, frankly, you point and you say, I don't think these guys are going to try to play an 82. But there we have them. There's sort of 7, 8, 9 guys, whatever it is, in the entire NBA. And maybe that number goes down next year. Maybe it goes up. We'll see. It'll be, some of it is based on what's going on in the team for these dudes. Like Anthony Edwards, you figure, you know, deep playoff run could change that a little bit. You know, it didn't seem to for Jason Tatum, but you never know. That type of thing can creep in. Basically, the conclusion is, if you're going to draft a guy for totals, you should probably draft a guy that you also believe can get somewhere near his draft position on the per game side. By the way, I don't think it's a coincidence that Sabonis, the one guy who sort of won this, or Jason Tatum, who was very close, as again, just like a -4, these are the guys that were closer to their draft position on the per game side. Sabonis was like about a -14 per game versus his ADP. Jason Tatum was about a -8. And then it starts to get a little bit bigger. Anthony Edwards was like a -25-ish. Mikal Bridges was a -70. Oops. So, yeah, I mean, if you think your guy gets to within like 6 to 10 slots of his ADP on the per-game side and you're confident he's a totals monster, you can kind of get away with it. But I still don't think it's a great idea, because what if it's the year they finally do miss some games due to injury? Then you've basically got no shot, zero shot of having a draft day win with that guy. At least with someone like DeRozan here, who was a guy we called a likely health play. He beat his mark per game at 31 versus his ADP, which was in the 40s. So even if he missed a dozen games or 15 games, he's still a draft day near win in a way where someone like, let's say, Anthony Edwards missed 15 games this year. He's a big draft day loss in that instance. Then he's 37 per game, and he's probably down like 45 to 50 by totals. It's not close. You set yourself up with almost no margin of error if you're drafting someone exclusively on health and not on a per-game expectation as well. Playoffs continued last night. Orlando finally got a win. Kind of figured that at some point a few shots would drop for the Magic, and a whole bunch of them did. This one screaming home court advantage. Cleveland still couldn't make a shot. But this game did finally go over the total by one bucket. Philly, New York went over. Lakers, Nuggets was actually a push. I was right on the number. I think we finally, I guess, in this one saw the totals maybe over-adjust a little bit. Although that Cleveland-Orlando series, this feels like an opportunity to keep looking towards unders, because Orlando's not going to shoot this well again. I mean, Paolo hitting 4 threes. Suggs going, what, 9 for 11 shooting? They shot 51%. Cleveland continued to stink it up shooting. This one almost felt like it bought us a tiny window. Knicks, Sixers, that was a weird one. Again, both teams shot the ball well. Sixers shot 55%. They had 15 threes, including Embiid with a 50-burger, 5 three-pointers. Yeah, I mean, I don't think we assume that this type of thing happens again, but does it move the number enough for us to point and say, you know what, that created a little bit of a value bubble. When did they play again? Sunday? Yeah, total's already out at 208 on that ball game. Yeah, I mean, you know, last one was 205. It went up by 3. Is 208 high enough to dive in on an under? Pace was pretty high in that ball game. Yeah, questionable. It's probably a pretty good number. And let's see what the hell else we got going on tonight in the NBA. I want to make sure we're doing this in order. Oh, well, looking at yesterday first. And then Denver over the Lakers. I don't know how the Lakers are even involved in the next ball game. One would assume that they're just not focused. What that means for you know, how a final number goes, I really don't know. I would assume the Nuggets are favored. Yeah, they're favored by 3. I mean, I think that series is over. I'd be very surprised if the Lakers were even competitive on Saturday, but, you know, maybe they'll surprise me. As far as what's coming up tonight, Milwaukee is in Indiana. Pacers are favored by 6. Still no Giannis. I don't see really a way that if the Pacers are focused that Milwaukee can win this ballgame. It should be relatively high scoring because that's what the Pacers want to do, and they'll control the tempo on their home court. Clippers at Mavs, Dallas by 4.5. You know, does Kawhi have his legs underneath him? I think these are going to be pretty tight ball games mostly. What I'm not sure of with Clippers-Mavs is scoring-wise, because they've been relatively slow games, despite a whole bunch of free throws, actually. You know, they're just slow ball games, and nobody's been able to make a shot. I don't know if that changes as we go forward. It's not going to be as low as the last one. That one ended at 189. I think you probably... Probably a slight lean to the Clippers, I guess, for that game tonight. Phoenix and Minnesota. Well, is there a Minnesota letdown is the question. I think I might consider looking at an over in this one. Phoenix has been able to do next to nothing so far. They put up 93 points, but that game still got to a 198. And the total there now is 207.5. I think you see Phoenix shoot the ball a little bit better. You'll see Booker and KD play better in this ball game. Minnesota shouldn't have much trouble kind of replicating what they did because anyway, they shot the ball all that well. The pace was good enough to get there, too, as another kind of side point. So if you get a little bit of offense in these ball games, and, geez, if Phoenix can keep their turnovers down, they had 19 in game two. That's one of those ones where I finally see a number and think, you know what, 207.5, I think these teams could actually get there. So slightly into the over on that last one today. Again, Clippers-Mavs, I think I'd lean slightly to the Clippers, but I'd really prefer to get more like 5.5 or 6 points. I don't think you're going to get there. Pacers covering 6, I think, is asking a decent amount. Total of 223.5 on that ball game. I mean, the last one got to 233, but they didn't move the number, which is oddsmakers like, yeah, we don't think that this is going to change much. Do we think the Pacers can get to 125 again? Probably not. 5 turnovers in that game. They took incredible care of the basketball. It really wasn't played all that fast. They just scored a ton. So maybe even a slight lean to the under on that first one. As far as the other stuff going on Saturday, Orlando favored by 2, total of 201.5. So again, they didn't even move the number off the last one to say, yeah, we think maybe it could get to 204 again. So I still lean under Cleveland-Orlando. I think that one, you just take the money line on whatever team you think is going to win, which one I don't know that is. Oklahoma City favored by 1 at New Orleans. I got no feel for what this ballgame is going to be like. Boston and Miami, Boston favored by 9. I think this is one where the Celtics probably stop playing with their food. I might be more inclined to take the Miami team total under as opposed to the entire ballgame because I don't know what Boston is going to do. But Miami put up a 111 on a basically like one of the best three-point shooting games ever. But the pace suggested this game should have been played more in the 90s on both sides, really. Maybe Boston, you could argue, should have been right around 100. But if Miami doesn't go that insane from three, they score 95 points. So slightly to the under in that ball game, slightly to Boston. And then, as I mentioned, I don't see the Lakers competing in the late game on Saturday, but maybe they surprise me. Knicks, Phillies favored by 4.5. We mentioned that total of 208. I don't really know what the next ball game there is going to look like. I would probably lean back towards the under, and that's the only other line that is currently on the board. And that is your show for Friday, ladies and gentlemen. Kind of a speed run through the NBA playoffs. We'll see if anybody's been eliminated by the time Monday comes looping back around when we will have our next show here on Fantasy NBA Today. Again, your thoughts for the day. If you're going to draft by totals, make sure you're going after somebody that has a chance to get near his rank on a per-game side as well. I'm Dan Bespris for Fantasy NBA Today. Have a lovely weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.